The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. Our guests are the acquisitive duo who run Beacon Point Advisors. And I say acquisitive because Beacon Point has made more than a dozen acquisitions this decade and recently made its first in about 15 months. And that merger took the form of a marriage between Beacon Point and Heller Wealth Advisors. As most of you know, it has been merger mania in the RIA business. I believe 2019 is on pace to be a record year. 2018 was a record year for M&As. And Beacon Point has been a happy participant in that trend. And in the process, it's grown its AUM and geographic footprint through these acquisitions. So we are joined by the firm founder and CEO, Shannon Yuccy, who was on the cover of the magazine. She was our cover profile about 18 months ago, and firm president and founding partner, Matt Cooper. Shannon and Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Thank you very much. Glad to be here today.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Well, glad to have you guys because, you know, we have never done a podcast like this before, not on this subject. And we, you know, it's a good opportunity right now to better understand all the considerations that go into the really touchy process of finding an acquisition partner, negotiating the terms of the deal, and then conflating these two organizational cultures, which over and over again, I hear that that's the big deal is making sure that the cultures mesh. So let's zero in on this Heller deal. How did your organizations find one another, for starters?
We have a regular process in terms of identifying and reaching out to potential targets in the market, and that's run by another person here in the firm. And it's multi-pronged. In this case, it was using our standard database that we use. It's available, you know, one of the industry databases that gives us a list of targets in certain markets, and we can sort by the type of firm. And we send out a pre-approach email to firms that we think might be good partners of ours in that particular market. So in this case, that person sent out an email to Jordan Heller and asked for an initial call or meeting the next time Matt was in the New York marketplace. And so the email was sent out. There was no response. He sent a second email. There was a response, but the timing didn't work. He sent a third email, which then enabled Jordan Heller, the principal of that, his former firm, and myself to meet outside of Penn Station at a Starbucks at a little table there with pigeons landing all around us. It was quite a scene.
So Jordan Heller is the nameplate partner of Heller Wealth Advisors, obviously. So there's that. So Matt, tell me this. What does the email say? Just in essence, he obviously ignored the first one. You already said that. So I don't know if it got lost in the shuffle or he thought maybe this isn't serious, or if he's serious, he'll come back to me. But in essence, what does that email say?
Well, first it says, look, we're looking for a partner in your area. Congratulations on your success. You know, as we both know, it's not easy to found and grow a successful RIA firm. We are looking for a partner in your market. We are different than maybe many of the aggregators out there in our space, and that we are employee owned. We haven't taken any outside money to date. And it really hits on how we've been able to help other smaller RIAs have the benefits of scale and to grow much faster, and to give them the opportunity to really fulfill their fiduciary promise to their clients and their moral obligation to their team, and at the same time have certainty to their succession plan down the road. Not now, because we're not looking for people who just want to retire and walk away. We really want people who are future-based and excited about growing the firm and making it happen over the next 6, 7, 10, 15 years. So it really talks about how we can help them grow faster, enjoy the process, spend more time with clients, get more clients, and then have certainty for themselves, their clients, and their team down the road.
Okay, so you're looking for operators, people who still want to stay in the game. And yet, what I see a lot of is some very advanced in the years heads of RIAs who are looking to finally kind of realize the equity they've built up in the firm and really move into retirement. I mean, by comparison, Shannon and Matt, you're spring chickens compared to a lot of the guys and who run these RIAs. So obviously that's one of the considerations. Shannon, why was Heller Wealth Advisors a good fit for Beacon Point? So Jordan Heller, obviously is not looking to retire, but in addition to his willingness to stay in the game, what makes Heller a good fit for your organization?
Sure. And, you know, you bring up a very interesting point in that there are a lot of folks in our business that are near retirement age. Our business model actually attracts firms that are not necessarily in retirement age, but those that are actually really looking to grow their business for the next 10 to 15 years. So we're excited about the partners that we've actually partnered with to be able to grow their businesses. But what was exciting for us about Heller was really geographic expansion in an area where we were looking to have a beachhead. Because it's a very attractive market. Additionally, they brought with them a strong talent base of advisors, as well as additional expertise in certain asset classes that we were looking for. And I think maybe most importantly for the business, it was accretive to our organization in terms of our earnings.
What size is the organization Heller had? What is the AUM at Heller when you acquired them?
They were just over $400 million. So most of it was AUM, some was AUA, where they advised on a few 401k plans, but total assets, a little over $400 million, 90%+ of that is assets under management.
So what does this acquisition accomplish for Beacon Point strategically? I mean, obviously you did say there is the market consideration. You wanted a presence in the, you did say New York market. But what does, other than that, what does it accomplish for Beacon Point? What are some of the other elements?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, most importantly, it's bringing on the right talent pool within the organization. You know, as you look at this marketplace today with our unemployment rate, it's being able to find and attract key talent. And with that firm came some amazing talent that we're able to add to our organization. You know, additionally, it's the expertise around, you know, various aspects of the business. So whether it be on the manager research side, on the investment side, or being on the operating side, those are important aspects to add to the business.
So mergers and acquisitions as among, you know, RIAs, as I was saying at the top, it's really so much about culture. Speak to that. Are the cultures between Beacon Point and Heller, are they identical, complementary, or are you in the process you know, I hate to say indoctrination because it sounds a little forceful, but a synonym escapes me right now. So is indoctrination going on right now? Is that part of the agenda for the merger?
Yeah, that wouldn't be, I wouldn't use that word, no. Obviously there's no culture that is the same at any organization, just like no two people are the same. I mean, it's like a marriage, you give and take on certain things, but we really strive, you know, Matt's first rule of thumb in terms of looking for a new partner office is no jerks. His second is no jerks. And his third is no jerks. So we're really looking to find complementary cultures that really can add to our business. So similar investment styles, similar service models as well, and really talent retention are really the three key areas that we look for in a business.
Yeah, I would add to that, and that's spot on. And you know, Mike, at the end of the day, to use a cliche, the most important thing is that we like, trust, and respect each other, and that they're good people that we're partnering with. And if we have all of that, cultures evolve over time. And if you like, trust, and respect each other, nobody's going to do anything to jeopardize the relationship, and the culture will evolve and get better over time.
Yeah, Mike, one of the things that's obviously extremely important to us is keeping the culture that we started within the organization. But every firm brings something unique to our organization that we like to, it's just additive to the business. So somebody may be doing something one way that we say, gosh, that's amazing what you're doing for your employees. Let's do that across the firm. So we're really trying to take the best of all of us and make it something really great.
Talk about the due diligence process a little bit. You obviously do a little vetting ahead of time, or you wouldn't have approached to begin with and begin the conversation. But once Jordan Heller started indicating to you that he was interested, what's the process like from there? How does due diligence unfold from there according to the Beacon Point playbook?
We have two separate diligence checklists. The first one, well, let me back up from there. Before we get into the diligence checklist, there are conversations that happen. I will visit the proposed target's office and just make sure that it's real, it exists, that the people are normal people that you know tend to be enjoying what they're doing. I'll invite the principals to our office here in Newport Beach. They'll meet with the key players of the firm, from Shannon as CEO all the way through all the leadership team here and the different components of the business. If that checks out, then we have an initial list of 15 questions that need to be answered. And those are, you know, as simple as, are there any regulatory issues in the background to, you know, leases and contracts and how they invest money and so on and so forth on behalf of their clients. If those 15 questions are answered, I can bring that to our board internally and we'll give a thumbs up, thumbs down vote on whether or not we pursue the acquisition target. Then we determine whether or not the other side, the target themselves, wants to do this. And if they do, then we have an expanded list now that goes from 15 to 75 questions that are very detailed on all aspects of their business that need to be satisfied before we'll close the transaction, if you will.
And I think it's important to note there too, we do have somebody on our team that handles and organizes that so that we're, you know, all working together in terms of doing that due diligence. There's a lot of pieces to it and we want to make sure that we know what we're getting into when we make the acquisition.
Now, the acquisition has closed, is that correct? When did it actually close?
March 31st.
And this is the first acquisition you've made in 15 months. But as I was saying, you made, what, a dozen acquisitions over the course of the decade. So you guys have been aggressive about that. But then there's this 15-month fallow period. So were you still in the process of acculturation with all the other acquisitions that you made? Or did it just take that long to find another good target? Can you explain the 15-month abstinence?
Yeah, I think it's just as simple. We're very, very thoughtful in how we approach this. We would rather wait than do a bad deal, to put it in simple terms. So I don't think it's anything other than us being patient and being thoughtful in our approach. And you know, we're not running around out there overpaying for firms or doing some of the things that may be transpiring in today's market because it's such a frenzied marketplace today. We maintain our discipline and our thoughtful approach to finding the partners that we want and that want to work with us.
You know, I ask how Heller Wealth advances Beacon Point's agenda. What about the reverse? As far as Jordan Heller's concerned, if he was on this phone call right now, would he, what would he say? Because I think you both probably have know him well enough at this point to speak on his behalf.
You made a comment earlier, Mike, that we're looking for operators. And I would suggest, to some extent, you're right, but what we're really looking for are those who want to simplify their lives. So what Jordan gets from this transaction is he gets the ability to spend more time with his clients and developing those relationships even deeper and going after more client relationships. And we're taking a lot of the non-money-making stuff out of his way and allowing him to do that. So what we're doing is we're giving him all the benefits of scale of a much larger organization in addition to a bigger brand and bigger story, all the benefits of scale without him having to take money out of his own pocket and invest in Salesforce, for example, or more people in marketing, more people in accounting, more people in HR. He has all of those resources here at Beacon Point, so he can focus on what really creates value, and that's the client relationships and getting more of them.
And the only thing I would add there, it also allows him to get the best thinking from other partners. You know, who's having success in what areas and why, and what's really working within the organizations. And, you know, as Matt said, it really allows them to offload a lot of the stuff that they otherwise would be saddled with that isn't really generating profits or their best work in the business.
So if this deal is a success, you know, how do you expect it to play out over the next 1 to 5 years? And again, I think you've given components of the answer to that question already, but what about that? Or you might even cite and I'm not asking you to do this by name, Because Heller is so new, you might look back at one of the previous acquisitions that worked out spectacularly well and just kind of sketch that out for us. What's real success with an M&A of this sort?
Well, I mean, if you want to make those kind of comparisons, our Arizona partners in Scottsdale, when they merged with us, they had $110 million in assets under management. They're now over $1 billion. The office had 4 people and now has 18 people. So it's an expansion of the team. It's an expansion of capabilities and an expansion of economics at the same time. And we could cite other examples. Our Northern California office started with $50 million, 5-0, and now they're nearing $700 million. So we believe that we can work with the New York team and help them realize their dreams, which are being, you know, a multi-billion-dollar hub office for Beacon Point in the New York metro market.
Well, now that's interesting, because we tend to, in the media anyway, we tend to talk about organic growth and inorganic growth. But, you know, you make an acquisition, that's considered inorganic growth. And yet what has happened is you've made certain acquisitions, and then there's a tremendous amount of organic growth that happens in that office or organization wide. So it sounds almost like it's a false way to look at it to call growth through M&As necessarily inorganic growth. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think the way we are starting to look at it is really same store sales. You know, how are each of those offices producing more and more? So that's the organic growth versus the inorganic growth. You know, where our expectations are that each office grows, you know, in excess of 20%, which they've been doing. And the reason for that, and Matt talks quite a bit about this, is because it allows us to retain and attract talent, as well as allow for a growth pattern for most of those folks in the organization, as well as to be able to serve, which is most important, to be able to service those clients.
I'm curious what your biggest reservation was with regard to Heller Wealth Advisors in the acquisition. Was there one thing that maybe a dangling issue that you had to satisfy before, you know, one of the 15 that didn't just pass muster immediately, or just something that didn't settle quite right in your stomach?
Absolutely nothing with respect to the people or the qualitative aspects of the deal. Without getting into specifics, they use one form of alternative investment that we didn't have much experience with as a firm. And so we took the time and we spent several digging in on that particular alternative investment and visiting with the originators of that investment in New York City. Our CIO spent quite a bit of time on it. He's a very sophisticated person himself. But other than that, no reservations ahead of time. But I'll tell you this, you can spend a year with somebody getting to know them and their team as well as you possibly can. But until the transition begins, until the deal closes and the transition begins, you don't know what the emotional response is going to be to that transition. It's kind of like, you know, planning for a war and then all of a sudden the shooting starts. You don't know how everybody's going to react. Heller was phenomenal and their team was phenomenal. And, you know, our team, true to form, having been through this several times now, was just fantastic. So it turned out great, but you're always a little bit nervous as you're stepping into, you know, a new transition.
What was the alternative investment you referred to? What was the nature of it, or what kind of instrument was it that gave you guys pause?
It was a structured product that we just didn't have experience investing in the past. So it wasn't so much that it was incredibly unique, but we just had not invested in the past, and we just really wanted to get our arms around it. And I would say if something made us really uneasy in the stomach, we wouldn't move forward, period. There's too many great firms out there that we can partner with, that if there's anything, I mean, we're definitely going to do our due diligence and make sure that we're investing and putting resources to the right firms. But if something makes us uncomfortable, we're going to take a pass.
So you're continuing to achieve greater scale with these acquisitions. What does that greater scale allow Beacon Point to do? And what kind of scale are you trying to achieve? I mean, if you look 5 or 10 years down the road, do you already have some targets in mind? Not specific RIAs, but just numbers to achieve.
one of many acquisitions we'll make, and we've got anticipated target markets that we're looking at, actively looking at right now, and actually in discussions with some firms. We'd love to be in the Southeast, as well as the Mid-Atlantic and the greater Midwest. And I think if you look at these acquisitions, with each acquisition, we become a better firm. Just by doing the acquisition, we become better, and they make us better, right? So you bring on a new organization, and they're challenging us to do our job better, which I think is phenomenal for the firm in total. We also see and have seen, you know, overall improvement in company performance. So, you know, with each firm coming on, you know, they're asking us for new things, or asking us or challenging us to do things a certain way, and, you know, us developing those processes and procedures to better serve our entire market has been extremely helpful.
Are more acquisitions in the offing? Do you have some targets right now that you're looking at? And over the next, say, 5 to 10 years, maybe impossible to say, but what are you thinking of in terms of number of acquisitions that might be made, and or how committed are you to continuing down this the M&A path?
We have several conversations going on right now as we speak. Obviously, I'm not going to name those firms. Some are dead center in the areas that Shannon mentioned that we're targeting. And, you know, we've got 14 offices now scattered around the country, and with the bulk of them being here in California. But I could see our footprint rising to 30 offices, maybe a couple satellites. But I don't see us, and this is, I'm speaking on behalf of the firm now, we don't see ourselves as a 100 office type organization or a 75 office organization. I think we'd rather have a smaller number of very high quality offices with great people and help each one of those offices grow to be $2, 3, 4, or $5 billion.
What is your capacity just in terms of what the firm is capable of doing in terms of number of acquisitions? You have people dedicated to this. You've done it many times now. You're, I'm sure, refined that process. The efficiency must be greater at this point. And not that you're looking to go out there and just make a slew of acquisitions, but if you found several good targets all at once, I mean, could you do simultaneous deals?
Yes, we could certainly do more than one deal at a time, but we would want to make sure we did it right. So depending on the complexity of the deal or whatever, we may stagger them slightly, but they could overlap, sure.
Yeah, and I would echo what Matt said. You know, we've built an incredible leadership team here who has the capacity to, you know, add multiple firms at the same time. We've also developed, you know, internal, you know, processes and procedures that allow us to do it fairly quickly and efficiently. I mean, that's taken time, right? I mean, that wasn't with the first acquisition, but certainly with the 14th office, we've been able to streamline things quite a bit, but we learn through every acquisition and we just get better.
You were saying earlier that you'll acquire a firm and you'll find that, or in the process of doing your due diligence, you'll find that they're doing something that's quite brilliant and something that you think should be shared organization-wide. How does, now that you've got all these various offices and these various players all in the game under one roof, so to speak, how does information sharing take place? What do you do to make sure there's knowledge transfer and information sharing?
That's a great question. So we have a couple things. Knowledge Hub, which is, you find anything about everything about the firm. If you're looking how to do something in particular, it's out there. We also have our own intranet where we use Yammer to post internal communications on a day-to-day basis. We also have several committees throughout the organization that aren't just housed out of our home office, that take the best and brightest out of various offices around certain topics that they're interested in. We also do 2 leadership summits a year where we're bringing all the partners in together to learn best practices and talk about new ideas that are shared throughout the organization.
Right at the start of your answer, Shannon, it got a little bit garbled. So the first point that you made, I think, got lost.
Yes, one thing we've implemented within the organization is a knowledge-based system, which is really the Wikipedia of Beacon Point. So everything you want to know about how we do things as a firm is located there.
So, Shannon, you were saying earlier that you're up to about 10 billion, 9 to 10 billion, or maybe even a little higher than that in AUM. So there you are, a large organization, you're acquiring smaller RIAs. What does it mean to them that you have got that kind of scale?
Scale is absolutely critical in our space right now for a number of reasons. Most firms can't right now staff up enough for technology, hiring, so human resources, as well as compliance, investments. I mean, there's a lot of money that goes into hiring that talent. So if we're able to leverage our talent for these other offices, as well as marketing, I mean, that's another big one, they're able to scale their business at a much faster clip. And it's why, you know, we talked earlier about organic versus inorganic growth. It's why the offices that we bring into the fold have such significant organic growth within their business.
The only thing I would add is the business is becoming so much more competitive today, and we're not seeing any real fee pressure, but we're seeing clients wanting more for the same fee or less, which is causing smaller firms to need to invest in their business. And one of the biggest issues with small RIA firms is the bottom line of their business, or their EBOC, their earnings before owner's comp, is their owner's comp. They take it all home at the end of the year. And so in order for them to invest in the technology and the people that they're going to need to compete with now much larger, more sophisticated RIA firms that have true scale, they're going to have to take money out of their own pocket, invest it in people and technology, and that's risky. What if they make the wrong decision? And by the way, while they're doing that, they're not only taking money out of their own pocket, their own bank account to throw back into the business, which is a risky proposition, but they've taken their eye off of their clients and getting more of them. So they're actually falling behind in the race as they're trying to stay current and to try to get ahead. So it's just an environment today where things have changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And in order for them to compete, they need to get free of a lot of the non-money-making stuff and to have the advantages of scale.
Well, so given what you've said, what about the RIA landscape? It sounds like, you know, the small players aren't really going to be able to compete, maybe not even be able to survive unless they go on to some kind of platform or they find an acquisition partner. If you look down the road, what do you expect the RIA landscape to look like in 10 years or so?
Well, I think you're going to have practices and you're going to have businesses. So I think the single advisor small, or single 1-2 advisor small practice still exists down the road, but their single generation practices with no legacy to them and no real equity value to them. I think that they'll struggle to compete for clients, but they'll be able to plug into larger technology supported platforms and TAMPs that allow them to do their business and to serve their clients for, you know, the time that they're in the business, but it certainly won't be passed on to somebody else. And then you'll have the other end of the barbell, which will be large enterprises of scale, some large regional players, as well as a few super large national players that will suck up a lot of the business. Now, the reality today is there are 17 to 19,000 different RIAs. If you listen to the stats from the different sources, there were only 200 or so recorded M&A deals last year. And the custodians, whether it's Schwab, TD Ameritrade, Fidelity, or BNY Mellon, they're actually creating more new RIAs every year, bringing people out of the wirehouses and setting up new RIAs than the mergers are soaking up. So the number of RIAs is likely expanding. So this whole phenomena of M&A in our space is probably going to play out for the next 10 to 15 years. You know, most, not in our case, but in the vast majority of cases with respect to RIAs, these are businesses and entrepreneurs by accident. These were advisors who had a passion for serving clients and advising clients that got another client and then another client and another client. And then they woke up one day and they said, wow, this is now a pretty healthy practice with $1 million in revenue or whatever it may be. And I've got myself a business on my hands. And then some even took it even further, and now they're a multi-billion dollar business. So it's an interesting phenomenon. I think we're going to continue to have smaller players in the marketplace. I just think the marketplace is going to be more barbell than it is today.
Interesting. Okay, final question. Running a business at any scale is stressful. And now you've got multiple offices. The stakes are so much higher. Shannon, you started this organization, and I know that you run, and I'm not sure if you run because that's a great stress reliever, or you're just you know, very, very much into fitness. But do you feel that the stress level, or what's your stress level like? And same question to you, Matt, as well, the both of you. Is it more stressful as the organization acquires offices and just the sheer size or magnitude of the business grows?
I wouldn't say stressful. It's certainly more complex. But, you know, with each firm, it comes unique personalities and great people. And I love it. I mean, I think that's what makes this business fun. And I think the complexity of it also makes it really exciting. If we weren't growing, I think that would be a lot more stressful.
You know, the advantage that we have is we're in an industry that requires successful people to be real, genuine people. And so, you know, the pool that we're fishing in is generally good people, and that makes it enjoyable. I think anything you're doing is going to have challenges periodically. But, I mean, look, I think we really enjoy what we're doing, and we love the game, and we're excited to play it for the next 20 years.
Our guests have been Shannon Yusey and Matt Cooper. Shannon is a founder and CEO of Beacon Point Advisors, and Matt Cooper is the firm president and a founding partner. And we've been talking about their most recent acquisition. And I had mentioned that Shannon Yusey was on the cover of the magazine about 18 months ago. Anybody who would like to read that cover profile, simply go to our website. And in the search bar, just put text messages to myself. That was the headline. And if you're wondering what text messages to myself means, take a read. And Shannon, to you and to Matt, thanks a million for taking the time.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.